from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum this morning, in Jungle of Stone, journalist William Carlson recounts the story of John Lloyd Stephens and Frederick Catherwood, whose perilous trek through the jungles of Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico led to the discovery of the ancient Mayan civilization. We'll talk with Carlson about their 2,500-mile journey, which he retraced in a beat-up Toyota Corolla. Join us for Forum. It's after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. In this Forum hour, we're joined by Bay Area author and journalist William Carlson. His book, Jungle of Stone, tells the epic tale of two explorers, travel writer, lawyer, and diplomat John Lloyd Stephens, and British artist and architect Frederick Catherwood, and how in 1839 they discovered the lost civilization of the Maya. The two men trekked through the rainforests of Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico, and their journey is one that William Carlson retraced for his new book. Carlson has worked for both the New York Times and the San Francisco Chronicle, taught journalism at UC Berkeley, and was a finalist in 1999 for the Pulitzer Prize, and we welcome him to the second hour of the Forum program. Good to have you here.
Good morning, Michael. It's a pleasure.
Glad to have you, and a pleasure to be talking about this journey. There are two journeys, really. There was the one that I just mentioned that took place back in the 19th century, and there was a journey that you took following their footsteps. But let's talk about their footsteps first and that journey initially, because it's fascinating how this all started with just a desire to find out about, submerged stones that were reported that were intricately carved, and thus began the Odyssey, just from reports of submerged stones, really.
Well, these two men had been fascinated by history because they had traveled through the Middle East to Egypt and Greece and separately. so they had a great passion and a curiosity about ancient civilizations already. And when they heard rumors about these stones found in Central America, They just couldn't resist. They had very comfortable lives in New York City. They were very successful in what they did. One was an artist. The other was a lawyer, but actually was an author because he wrote up his travel accounts in Egypt and the Holy Land and Petra and traveling through the Sinai Desert to Mount Sinai. But they couldn't resist. When they heard about these stone runes, carved runes in Central America, they had to go.
And they went. They went into the jungles. They went into, it was interesting to read about just from these vague reports going off and deciding maybe to get what was described as a whiff of adventure. And boy, did they get adventure. I mean, they went through civil wars. They got covered with ticks, malaria. I mean, the list goes on. We could catalog it into the wild frontier from that comfortable life, as you described it. But what they did was really kind of forever change worldviews of the Mayans and of what were thought to be these indigenous civilizations that were thought to be savage-like, backward, and the rest, and were actually extraordinarily, in many ways, sophisticated, as much as Greece and Rome.
Well, that's the interesting thing. And one of the interesting things about doing the book is when you do a book like this is to figure out what the world knew before and what they knew after. For example, I always think of Copernicus. Everyone thought the sun went around the earth. And Copernicus and Galileo, changed all that, and we've never been the same. What happened then was the view was very Eurocentric, very old world. They felt that if there were any kind of civilizations, any ruins that could be found in the jungles of Central America, they had to come from the old world. The whole idea of diffusion. So the theories were it had to be the Carthaginians or the Phoenicians, but the prevailing theory really at the time was the lost tribes of Israel. And so Stephens and Catherwood really put that to rest because they had been to the old world. They had been to the old world ruins. They had seen the pyramids and the hieroglyphics. And in Central America, having traveled through 40-some cities, discovering 40-some cities, they realized that this was not from the old world. This was indigenous. This grew up in the new world.
And what a Rubicon that was to cross. I mean, because yes. Now we take it for granted when we think about Mayan civilization, very sophisticated culture, flourishing with astronomy and art and architecture and so forth. But at the time they went on this journey, like you said, the notion was these backward people, these indigenous people, couldn't possibly have had anything even resembling that, anything
exactly.
tantamount to that. So it was an extraordinary discovery, and the discovery really had to do a lot with just kind of charting it and getting into a sense of, well, first of all, let's talk about the artists, I mean, as part of this Anglo-American team, because the drawings were really remarkable. I mean, the drawings, from what they were able to discover, really almost looked like photographs.
Well, you know, this was a time before photography and before video and film. And when Stevens and Catherwood did this, well, I think when Stevens decided to go down, he had been appointed the diplomat by President Martin Van Buren to go down to negotiate a trade agreement with the Federation of the Central American States, but that was a cover. He always wanted to go down there and find these ruins. But he knew also if he went down there and he found these ruins, as descriptive as his earlier books had been, they would have to document this visually. People wouldn't believe it. The words weren't sufficient. And he and Catherwood crossed paths in New York, and they had the same interests. And so Catherwood was a brilliant illustrator, brilliant artist. And so he hooked up, he was a lawyer in New York, and he wrote up a contract. And I've held the contract in my hands because this is one of the reasons I did the book, is I found out that that Stevens' papers were at the Bancroft Library.
You got a lot of stuff from the Bancroft, didn't
you? Yeah, letters, yeah. Personal papers, and including the contract that Stevens wrote up with Catherwood, essentially hiring him to come along on the trip. Catherwood had no idea what he was getting into.
And this book turned out to be quite a success. I mean, it was a bestseller. Edgar Allan Poe, no less, said it's perhaps the most interesting travel book ever published. There's a real sense of this work not only tied to the discovery of Mayan civilization and leading to, but really beginning and creating a whole new dawn for what we now call modern architecture.
Well, the word archaeology didn't really exist at the time. I mean, they were the pioneers.
Sorry, I said architecture.
Yeah, sorry, I thought you meant archaeology.
I did.
Yeah, you know, the word didn't even exist. It was, and actually, the word Maya didn't exist. It was a word that was used for the language of the natives of the Yucatan. But so this was 1839, 1840. And so they were really pioneers. Prior to this, a lot of what kind of passed for architecture, now you got me, passed for archaeology was really treasure hunting, you know, to rob the tombs in Egypt.
Find the gold.
And so on. Yeah, right. Exactly. Find the gold and also to bring back as much as you could to the Louvre and the British Museum.
Well, there was a lot of exploring done sort of precursor to what you write about here. Von Humboldt, for example, comes to mind.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But also, you know, go fast forward now, you think about Indiana Jones. This has all that kind of quality to it. In fact, I think, didn't you say you thought maybe James Franco and Colin Firth would be good casting for a movie?
Oh, yes. In fact, yeah, right, I thought so. But one book reviewer described their journey, their adventures.
Tina wants to know which one. The American is James Franco. The Brit is Colin Firth. Colin Firth,
yes,
I think,
right.
Is Irish, actually. Catherwood, though, he was the illustrator. He kind of also drew up these Mayan temples in a way that, again, people could see they really existed. And now, as I say, they become almost second nature to anybody who studies Mayan civilization.
Well, and also, you know, some of the very detailed drawings he did, a lot of these stones were soft. They were made of limestone, and they eroded over time. They were destroyed by looters and so on. And so Mayanist scholars now can look back at Catherwood's drawings and the hieroglyphs on the monuments and now that they've broken the Maya code, can read the histories off of those monuments.
And so, tell us when the apocalypse is really going to happen. Remember all that kind of...
We survived 2012. I think we're on a new 5,200-year cycle.
We're talking about the Mayans 300 and 900 AD, is that right?
About 800 BC to about 900, about 1,600-year-long civilization. A remarkably long, sustainable civilization.
10 million city-states?
No. Only 60 to 80 city-states.
I didn't mean city-states. What?
Yeah, millions, 10 million people.
10 million people and how many city-states?
About 60 to 80 major city-states, and then among those also very major city-states like Tikal and Copan and Chichen Itza and Uxmal. They occupied an area of the Yucatan Peninsula, the lowland tropical jungles, in an area about the size of Maryland. And 10 million people at their peak were able to live in that that small area in a place now occupied about by 400,000 people.
Talking with William Carlson, he's the author of Jungle of Stone, the true story of two men, their extraordinary journey, and the discovery of the lost civilization of the Maya. Stevens, he kind of saw Commercial Canal. He was prescient enough to realize that there was a possibility, likelihood there.
When they went down there under his diplomatic cloak, he went to Nicaragua and surveyed a place there that they could build a canal, and then ultimately was involved in building a railroad across Panama, the Isthmus of Panama. So, he was a visionary. He was also, this was a time in America where capitalism, laissez-faire capitalism, entrepreneurship was at its peak. And capitalists would get together, put their money together. Of course, they always tried to get subsidies from the government. Didn't always work. But they were able to build railroads and remarkable things back then.
Remarkable men, really.
Well, he came from a family of merchants. His father was a merchant in New York City, and he was always investing in real estate as Manhattan, as New York moved up Manhattan. He and his father were always buying more land, so they were very visionary.
Oh, like the Trumps. We're talking again with Bill Carlson about his book Jungle of Stone. And I should mention that the author took this trip and has some really very detailed nature writing here. It kind of takes you on, instead of a mule, you took an old Toyota, right? That was lieu of a mule.
They traveled by mule. I mean, that was the transport of the time in the 1840s.
2,500 miles.
Yes, right. So I wanted to replicate this to the extent that I could and went down to the very places that they landed in Guatemala, and also at the same time of year, I wanted to experience, because down there they have rainy season, a dry season, and so on. And then I followed their trail, and I didn't want to do it by mule. I wasn't quite up to that, but I had the closest thing I could come up with was my wife and I had a house in Antigua, Guatemala, for many years, two decades almost, and we had a car down there, an old 1985 beat-up blue Toyota Corolla. Didn't have any air conditioning, didn't have a radio. We didn't want to make it attractive for robbery. So I took that old Toyota, and I basically followed their trail over a period of time all the way through.
Well, let's hope that this has more positive consequences for you in the long run than it did for these two guys. I mean, because one of their marriages was ruined and the other one kind of killed them, in fact.
Well, one book reviewer described their adventures as they made Indiana Jones look like a stay-at-home slacker. And I think that was very descriptive. I mean, the hardship, the mosquitoes, the heat, and bout after bout of malaria. Fortunately, I didn't get malaria, and I didn't have that much hardship. I remember at one point, there was a lot of hardship. I mean, a lot of places I had, pretty rudimentary places I stayed at. But when I finally got to Chichen Itza, up in a very popular place for tourists who come from Cancun in the Yucatan, I took a break and stayed at the Club Med right outside Chichen Itza. So
it doesn't get more sybaritic than that.
Yeah.
Were you not covered with ticks the way they were, though?
I had quite a few insect bites. Fortunately, I dodged the snakes, the fertile ants, the very deadly snakes and the scorpions.
But this, going through deserts and forests and
mountains.
And cliff-hanging mountains, literally.
Yes, right.
Quite a journey. Let me talk with you broadly, though, if I could, about what we draw from the lesson of the Mayas. It's often been a lesson that applies to our own lives on the planet now. A lot of people think, what we know about the Mayans now, they overconsumed their resources, they degraded the environment, all of those kinds of things that deforestation, economic inequality. Again, not joking about apocalypse in 2012 or anything, but, there is an apocalyptic feel. You look at the civilizations like that famous poem by Percy Bysshe Shelley, Ozymandias, there stood all that great civilizations, no more.
Well, they were too successful, essentially. Over the 1,600 years, they had grown too successful. They had gone beyond their agricultural carrying capacity. They had deforested the jungles, and interestingly enough, there are many theories, and I had to tread very carefully because I'm not a Mayanist scholar, but I did as deep as research as I could, and there's a lot of contention about what caused the collapse of the Mayan civilization. There are many, many factors, actually, wars over the declining resources between these. Each of these cities were individual states, kind of like Greece, if you think of Athens and Sparta and so on. And so they were divine kingships and dynasties. And so when the resources started to run out, there was quite a bit of fighting over it, a lot of wars, malnutrition, starvation. But the thing that really did them in was the deforestation of the jungle had caused because of the cycle of the moisture, had caused a tremendous mini climate change disaster. And these droughts, these decade-long droughts, which really did them in, emptied out the cities about 800, 900 A.D. And there are Maya that live in Central America now, in Guatemala. 40% of the population is pure Mayan Indian. But these are the descendants of this great civilization that ended around 900.
It's mainly Guatemalans because, there's always the connection that Latinos and Chicanos make to the Mayan civilization and the Aztec civilization and so forth because of the indigenousness of it. It's hard to get your mind around the fact that this is a civilization that, as many have compared it, and I think as you have intimated in your work, in terms of, say, architecture, equaled Greco-Roman. I mean, we see so much Greco-Roman architecture all the time, but it's really in many ways almost comparable in terms of its stature, in terms of its, formidable nature and so forth.
Monumental architecture on a level that obviously required millions of man hours of work, a highly stratified political system. They had a creation myth, a panoply of gods. They had
Their own cosmology, really.
Their own cosmology, a fascinating cosmology, by the way. They really invented the zero and also created the only writing in the Western Hemisphere. The only you can read, actually, from the hieroglyphs phonetically, the writing. And those hieroglyphs that are on the monuments and the palaces and the temples have now provided scholars and Mayanists with entire histories of these dynasties. They didn't have metal, and they didn't have the wheel, and still they were able to achieve this incredible civilization.
And that civilization was discovered because of only some vague reports of intricately sculpted stone. That's the subject of the book, Jungle of Stone, and that whole discovery. And the book that resulted from it. Let me bring our listeners into this. I know there's a lot of fascination with this world of the Mayans and also with the book that we're talking about here, which really began to make the Western world aware of just how sophisticated and how extraordinary that civilization was. And some of you may want to weigh in here. Some of you certainly have traveled through that area and may want to talk about it. Let me tell you how you can join our program. Our toll-free number is available to you, and we invite you to participate. You can join us now at 866-733-6786, the toll-free number again for your calls, 866-733-6786. And if you've done some traveling down there, or if you have some thoughts or questions or comments you want to bring to our conversation, there are a number of other ways you can join us. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also, of course, go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. The kind of travel writing that we're talking about here that, it's your travel writing and it's their travel writing too, but really it's very detailed observation. It comes from the power not only of close, detailed observation, but also of an ability to find a way through prose of replicating what you're seeing and bringing it to life.
Well, I'm glad you felt that. I mean, I tried to bring the reader. It was too good a story, you know, and I tried to bring the reader right through their journeys, and as viscerally, really, as possible to experience what, to some extent, what they experienced. And I really think that Catherwood's illustrations, which are we put throughout the book, and some of them I've matched with photographs that I've taken on my trip. I think that a lot of his illustrations really capture the jungle and capture the the context of finding these buried in the jungle.
Do you read like Paul Theroux and those kind of travel writers?
Not really, but I've always been fascinated by exploration. Lewis and Clark and Humboldt. You mentioned Alexander von Humboldt. I love exploration. I think it's a wonderful. I mean, it's done it myself, and I like to go to foreign lands. And
well, here's Scott. You want to talk about Cortez, huh?
Yeah. One of the greatest college courses I ever had was a Mexican art class where we learned just how extraordinarily advanced these folks were, from, you know, their calendars that were so accurate to the waterways they created, et cetera, et cetera. But I had learned that the downfall of these civilizations really was when Cortez came upon the area, and that they had thought he was like, you know, their Messiah, or thought that he was like the, you know, like a Jesus Christ type figure, and that rather than fight him, they welcomed him, and that in turn Cortez fought, and really was the beginning of the end.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, you make a good point. It's interesting. The Aztecs and the Incas and their civilizations, which were existent at the time that the Spanish arrived, the conquistadors arrived, actually were about 900 years after or 700 years after the Mayan, Mayan civilization had ceased to exist. And in fact, the Aztecs, which were only a couple hundred miles away. Oh, you need to. Okay.
Yeah. Well, no. We'll finish your thought when we return. But okay, feel free. We're talking about the Mayans. Feel free to join us. 866-733-6786 or email forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour with Bill Carlson, who's here in studio with us, author of Jungle of Stone, a journalist, and actually the author of a book that recounts the story of John Lloyd Stevens and Frederick Catherwood, who took this perilous journey through the jungles of Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico, which led to the discovery of ancient Mayan civilization. And Bill retraced that journey, 2,500-mile journey, with his beat-up Toyota Corolla. You are welcome to join us in this discussion. In fact, if any of you have done any traveling down there, it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts, or just your thoughts about the Mayan civilization or questions you might have about it. If any of you have seen some of the Mayan ruins, you may want to comment about that. I'd like to hear from you and like to have you engaged in this conversation. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. You can also email any thoughts you might have or questions or comments to forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Many ways that you can bring your own thoughts or questions or comments into the conversation. Bill Carlson had a thought before we went to the break that you were finishing.
So. Yeah, Scott had asked the question about Cortez and the Aztecs. And actually, the Aztecs are in relation to us. I make the point in the book that they are as far away historically from us today as the Maya were from them, from the Aztecs. So the Aztecs, who were only several hundred miles away from the Maya, the central Maya heartland, didn't even know that the Maya existed. It had been hundreds of years since the fall of the civilization of the Maya, and they were covered, already buried and covered by jungle. And but what really did in the Aztecs and the Incas, not so much the – I mean, it's always a wonderful story, Cortez, with 400 men conquered all the – it was smallpox. It was disease that the old world contributed to the new world and essentially wiped out, virtually wiped out 90% of the indigenous population of the Western Hemisphere.
And that includes a lot of Native Americans.
That's what I'm talking about, the Native American population.
I mean, as you go up even to Canada and so forth,
90%.
North America. Yeah.
Called one of the most calamitous genocides, in a sense, in history.
Listener wants to know, this is a tweet. Your guest talks about the discovery of Mayan civilization, but did the modern Mayans living next door to it really know nothing?
Actually, they didn't. They didn't. They would inquire, Stevens and Catherwood would inquire of the people that they encountered, the existing descendants of the Maya. They knew about the stones. It wasn't that they didn't know that there were runes were there. But they didn't know anything about them. There was no oral history. There was nothing that was known about them. They were just curious objects buried under the jungle to the inhabitants that Stevens and Catherwood encountered. I mean, they wanted to know. They questioned them. They wanted to find out because it was all a mystery. At that point, it was an entire mystery. What was this? You know, what that moment in Copan, the very first moment when they arrived in Copan, Honduras, and discovered these giant stelae, which are giant monoliths, brilliantly carved monuments of fearsome-looking kings with gigantic headdresses, phantasmagoric kinds of carvings and animals and monsters and creatures covered in hieroglyphs. At that moment, they were completely stunned. They had no idea that something like that could exist in the jungle heart of America. They were just, it blew their minds. And it was all a mystery. They didn't understand anything about it. So they inquired, they asked everyone, they tried to find out how old this was, how long it had been there. And that's what they went on to find out. I mean, they spent the next, they went two expeditions, two nine-month expeditions.
A comment from a listener named James who says, a friend of mine and I followed the footsteps of Catherwood and Stevens for a month back in 1981, traveling in a rented Volkswagen Combi bus, reading the journal entries the day before we visited various sites. We found their descriptions to be remarkably accurate. Crawling in bat guano under the temple at Mayapan, we persisted to find an amazingly clear pool based on their journal entries. There you go. Guy wants to know, you said you're not a Mayan scholar, but could Mr. Carlson discuss ancient Mayans and their understanding of astronomy?
A very complex subject, very complex. They had great cycles of time, 5,200-year cycles. That was the long count. And then within that, they had monthly counts, yearly counts, and they were like circles that that would cross over.
Intersecting circles.
Circles. Yeah. And, of course, they were great astronomers. They studied the sky. And, you know, today when I remember this meteor shower we just had. Very difficult to see because of the light pollution that we have all over the world now. I mean, you have to go up to the top of a mountain. Imagine back then, there were no lights at night. And so these cultures, these civilizations, when they looked at the sky, they saw a lot more than we did. And they were great astronomers.
And a lot of that astronomy was tied into what we were talking about before, their cosmology.
Their cosmology, and they could predict eclipses, over that period of time. They became very sophisticated in understanding the cycles, astronomical cycles.
I think Yeats may have even been influenced by all that concentricity and, you know, the sense of predictive powers and whatnot. Let me get our callers in here. Douglas is first up. Douglas, you're on.
Yeah, my name's Doug Daly. I'm a professor of archaeology at San Francisco State. And I just wanted to ask you to comment on a couple of things which sort of haven't come into your conversation yet. I think that the real importance of that trip and of the illustrations were the way in which they brought this ancient sort of exotic world into sort of public visual knowledge. It sort of created an entryway into understanding about a past world which no one had thought about or seen. And I just wonder whether you could comment a little bit about that role and less about the sort of Mayan civilization, because I think most of what we do now in archaeology is less about treasure hunting or these sort of white men going off to Central America to discover things, and we think about the ways in which we now have a perception of the past through these extraordinary illustrations which were in the book. So could you talk a little about that, please?
Well, I'm not quite sure what you're asking. I know the illustrations were very effective in the books, and Catherwood went on to publish a book of his own of 25 plates. You may have seen these. But what they accomplished, and I kind of put it in this perspective, it's as though if humans had gone to another planet 15,000 years ago and founded a colony on that planet, and then humans again arrived at that planet now and found on that planet monumental architecture, sculpture, painting, written language, understanding of the stars, astronomy.
And mathematics.
Mathematics, of course. And so that's what happened here. I mean, and this is one of the things that I think they brought to light is that, and it's been proven pretty conclusively now through DNA, that and the Western Hemisphere was founded really 15,000, 18,000 years ago by 1,000 to 2,000, 3,000 people that came across the Bering Straits during the Ice Age when the ice had lowered the oceans and formed a land bridge from Siberia, now Siberia, to Alaska. Then it was cut off after the Ice Age and the ice melted. And essentially, Western Hemisphere was isolated for 15,000 years. And so it's fascinating to think that a discovery like this can make us can focus us on the idea that there's something inherent in human culture and human, maybe in our DNA, that allow an isolated entire hemisphere to produce a civilization like the Maya and many others. There were civilizations, the Moca. There were other civilizations in South America, by the way, that were a concurrent. There was also the Olmec civilization that preceded the Maya in Mexico. But that they could, that human ingenuity, the problem solving of human beings, and so on. So I think that their discovery not only proved that it was the indigenous population of the Western Hemisphere, or in this case, Mesoamerica, Central America, that created these things. It wasn't diffusion from the other civilizations of the Old World, but also that there's something in humans that allow us to progress in this way, you know, it's kind of social, cultural evolution.
Douglas, did we get the answer to your question?
I don't know.
Well, I think it's an interesting conversation, but sort of I think the way in which you're approaching the topic of talking about social evolution, I mean, these things we just really don't talk about anymore in archaeology. It's a very old way of thinking about, I mean, your conception of the Western Hemisphere being isolated. Isolated from what? From Europe? I mean, it's a really strange Eurocentric perspective you're taking on this, and it just doesn't really reflect anthropological archaeology as its practice, certainly anywhere, Berkeley, Stanford, San Francisco State, anywhere. So I want to read your book. It sounds amazing. The trip they took was incredible, but I'm just a little disappointed at the sort of the level of conversation.
Well, I'm still not sure what the problem is. I mean, well, the old world and the new world were really separate, and yet they evolved in some ways that were very similar. And I think that was a kind of a mind-blowing
concept. You took almost a kind of universal human
disposition
toward creating the things that were created in that civilization.
Right, exactly. And I don't know that that's – I mean, maybe that is old school because, I mean, this was an old concept that they essentially discovered or brought about. So maybe it's old school now, but it wasn't – I can tell you in 1835, 1838, no one was thinking along those lines at all.
Well, Douglas, good to hear from you, and let us know what you think when you read the book. I appreciate your call. Let me get some more callers on air, and then we'll go to Richard next in Napa. Richard, you're on.
Okay.
Yes, sir, you're on the air.
Hello?
One more time. Richard, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, please, go ahead.
Hello, Michael?
I'm going to have to say goodbye to you. Let me get another caller on here. I don't know what. Patricia, go ahead. You're on the air.
This is not Patricia.
I'm sorry, Eugenie, please.
Yes. Yeah, I called in because you asked for people that had visited this area. I was there in the late 60s with a small environmental studies group through Queens College. But I thought an interesting point might be that at that time, no one knew how to decipher the runes. It was only when computers were able to process them that the information that you've been speaking about today was actually available. So it was still quite a mystery in the recent past, which made it even more fascinating.
Yeah. Well, computers probably have done a lot of work today, but actually it was a Russian, I forget his name, Kornosov, who worked with several people in the, I think it was the 70s and 80s, and they finally broke the Maya code. And the problem that they had, it took 150 years after Catherwood and Stevens had brought this to light, brought these hieroglyphs to light. And the problem that they had was they never quite figured out that it was part phonetic so that it could be read and spoken. And then also carved into the stones. I mean, now the Maya had written, you can see on their paintings and their frescoes, scribes that carry around books. They have books in their hands. Mm. They were bark paper books that were like accordions. They opened up like accordions. And a lot of these were burned by the Spanish Franciscan priests that had come, friars that had come over to Yucatan, but a lot of them, basically they were lost to moisture and rain and heat. But it would be incredible if somehow we could come across those books. There must have been thousands and thousands of books. They didn't have high priests, by the way. They had scribes. They considered scribes. This is a good thing for Michael and I, you know, we're writers. Scribes were the priests of the Maya culture.
As long as you mention the priests and the Franciscan friars burning their books, literally, and so forth. I've got a question from a listener named Bennett. Says, is there any truth to the idea that the human sacrifices practiced by the Mayan were made up by the church or exaggerated?
No, not at all.
They were for real.
Oh, they were for real.
Yeah.
Blood was a big thing. Blood was a major thing in the Maya culture.
Another listener wants to know, if the Mayans didn't have metal tools, how did they carve their stones?
Well, they used obsidian and harder rock, chert, and they worked a lot in limestone. That was a big factor in the Maya world because most of the Maya civilization was on a on the Yucatan Peninsula is really a limestone plate. It's and so they could carve out huge chunks of the limestone quarry as blocks, but then they had to cement it together. And so then they found by burning the limestone, they could make cement. And they also burned it slightly different way, and they made plaster. And so these gigantic monuments you see today at that time were completely plastered over and smooth and painted vibrant colors, vibrant colors. And then they also discovered if they burned limestone with water, they could make a certain solution and take the corn, the maize, and break it down and make it not only digestible, but bring out the protein in it. And that was very important to their development as a society. So limestone was very important to them. But they also deforested their forest to burn it to do all this.
Let me go to more of your calls. Let's get Jay on next. Jay, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hi. I'm a structural engineer by education and training. We used to design tall buildings for a living until now. I've retired now. I was going to ask, how did these Mayans build those pyramids?
Well,
Stone by stone.
Stone by stone, block by block. A lot of that, it's very interesting because a lot of people say, well, you know, there's pyramids. And at first, the problem that they had was these were pyramids that they found. And so a lot of people, well, there are pyramids in Egypt. Well, there are pyramids in Southeast Asia as well. It was the way to build up. They didn't have steel. They didn't have iron. So they couldn't build vertically. They had to build up, and they built up step by step. And so that's how they built it. And, you know, thousands of man hours of labor went into this. They cut the blocks and they built it. And they also did another thing that's very interesting. These were dynasties. Each city-state was a dynasty. So when the new ruler, the new heir came into power, they would build over the old pyramids.
Actually, a listener wants to know about the connection between the Mayans and the ancient Egyptians. After all, this listener, Idlem, writes, the ancient Egyptians were very experienced in long sea journeys across the Mediterranean. This may be a stretch to think.
Well, there's no evidence that they made it.
That's right.
No DNA evidence, no other evidence. And Stevens and Catherwood saw the difference between not only the hieroglyphs, not only the pyramids in Egypt are smooth, they're four-sided, they come to a point. All of Mayan pyramids are stepped primarily, and they end up with a temple on top. There's always a temple on the top.
Let me try to see if we can get Richard on again here. We had a problem before. Richard, are you there?
Yes, I'm here this time.
Okay, good.
Thank you very much, Michael. The last time I called you, it was about the archaeological work I did in Libya and regarded General Gaddafi. It was sort of be careful what you wish for as a conversation. But this time, I wanted to let Bill know that not all is lost as far as the rainforest is concerned. I worked in northern Guatemala with the University of Texas and the National Geographic in the 1980s at Rio Sul. And I saw that there was destruction of the rainforest still going on in extensive state in Mexico, just across the border, and in the especially in the western parts of the Petén. So I continued to work in archaeology over the years, doing surveys, and indeed the population of the whole area was dense. Throughout the classic period, which is up until 900 in the northern tropical jungle. And I would run into a structure outside the ceremonial centers almost every 200 or 300 yards. And what happened eventually is that I married a Guatemalan at the Diaz, and we started a family there. And now my son runs an agroforestry plantation in the Isabel region of the northern Guatemala. And through that, we have found that deforestation can be stopped if you can combine plants like cacao, which is what we grow now under, say, tropical hardwoods like mahogany. So the Mayans probably knew this, and they were able to sustain this for a longish period until, as you pointed out, Bill, the area probably became overpopulation, or the management due to warfare and so forth collapsed. But we are back doing it again. My son lives in Antigua.
Well, Bill lived many years in Antigua.
In Antigua, yeah.
I think I met him there once. I was a good friend of Shook.
Oh, Ed Shook, yeah.
When he was alive.
He excavated Tikal.
Yeah, well, appreciate your calling in, and thank you for that. I'm looking at some more callers we want to get on here, but here's Eugene, who writes, referring to a past caller, "Hi, folks. The Mayan civilization wasn't discovered. It was encountered." That is what the previous caller was referring to regarding your approach to the topic.
Well, we had some discussion about whether we, you know, it was a rediscovery of the Mayan civilization, discovery of the Mayan civilization. It comes up a lot. But I want to just go back to one thing that Richard was talking about, the deforestation and the problem that the Maya encountered. The Maya, when this was happening to them, when they exceeded their carrying capacity, agricultural, and their deforestation and so on, they didn't really know what was happening to them. They didn't understand it. But we understand it today. And
so we don't have to go the way of the Maya.
Well, I mean, we should learn. You know, always learn from history. And as Richard's son and these forestation projects that are occurring there, we are learning to some extent. But they had no they did not know what was happening to them.
Mark wants to know, have all the cities visited by Stevens and Catherwood been fully excavated, or have some been reclaimed by the jungle?
No, as far as I know, all have been restored, excavated, and in many cases restored. They missed a lot. They missed a great deal because they went around essentially the real heart of in the Pathan jungle, where Tikal, Calakmul, various sites that have been found since.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Tikal. Danny emails, if you ever get a chance, visit Tikal. We took a quick one-day tour, and I enjoyed every minute. The restored buildings are amazing, and what's still buried beneath the jungle is just as interesting. Would love to go back. And Dee wants to know if you were aware of the latest September issue of National Geographic regarding the Maya civilization written by Eric Vance. She says great information to go along with your discussion can be found in this article. Oh, he's got it right here.
I've got a copy of it right
here. Showed us his copy. Let me pull out another caller here. And Jan, that's you. Welcome.
Hi. Fascinating program. I was in Palenque a couple years ago, and awesome site. The preservation is incredible, and also they have a fantastic museum. And since then, I've read this book, Palenque, the Walker Caddy Expedition to the Ancient Maya City. Wondered if you were familiar with that.
That forms a subtext, a subplot in my book, because when Stevens and Catherwood arrived in Belize, they tipped off the British that they were looking for ruins. And after they left Belize to go to Guatemala and enter Central America, the British said, all right, we're going to beat them to the ruins. And so the Walker Caddy expedition was mounted. It was like 45 men to traverse the Pathan and Yucatan. And they actually reached Palenque first before Catherwood and Stevens. It's a sub story in my story, and how essentially Catherwood and Stevens beat him out in the end because they published before and so on. But yes, I'm very aware of that, and it's a fascinating book.
And we thank you for the call, Jen, and we go right to another caller, and that's Ruth. Thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yeah, my question is similar to the one about the pyramids, and I did hear the answer to that. But I've always been fascinated by those giant heads. They really look like Africans. They have curly hair, and they look like African guys. And do you have any comments or any information about whether possibly some Africans had been there?
Well, according to the latest DNA studies that have been done, that's not the case. They basically have traced all of the Native American Indians that exist today and so on back to Siberia, to the tribes in Asia, in the Siberian northern part of Siberia. So it's interesting. The Olmec civilization created these gigantic heads, and they look very Asian. So it's more Asian. Some of them look African as well. So it's a mystery. But as far as science is concerned now, primarily they all came from essentially Siberia and traveled across the Bering Strait.
Let me get to a couple more listener questions for you, Bill. Howie wants to know, are there any remaining examples of painted artifacts or buildings?
There are. There are fabulous frescoes in some of these ruins that they're still finding. They dig these things out and they go in and they're preserved. There's fabulous artistic drawings on the walls of a place called Banam Pak, right in the Pathan, in the central Pathan, and also the clay vases and other ceramics have painting and illustrations on them as well, in colors, in kind of vivid colors.
Again, we're talking to the author of Jungle of Stone, William Carlson, and Billy wants to know, Were there Mayans around Laguna Bacalar, it being the second biggest lake in Mexico? I'd be surprised if it wasn't utilized, though I didn't see any traces.
There were. Belize is now, they're finding more and more in Belize, right, and around that area.
And then Marte writes, in the 1970s, I used to go to the library, San Jose State, to pore over the books on pre-Columbian hieroglyphics, which were not deciphered yet at the time.
That's right. Yeah, it took a long time.
So we got the stories right from the source, thanks to the decoding. And good to have you here telling us about this whole journey, yours as well as theirs. Again, Jungle of Stone is Bill Carlson's book, subtitled The True Story of Two Men, Their Extraordinary Journey, and the Discovery of the Lost Civilization of the Maya. So good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And we are here with you on Forum every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. You can, of course, continue this discussion online. We encourage you to do that by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Tomorrow we'll be talking about Iran, among other things. A new book out that was done by the article, came out of an article in Wall Street Journal, having to do with the ransom, as some called it, are still calling it, and some calling it no. It's just a matter of statecraft and ongoing. We'll get into that controversy on tomorrow. Thank you for being a part of today's program again, and let me remind you who is behind the scenes in terms of the credits for this program. Our program Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg, and Susan Britton. Engineer is Howard Gelman. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Our interns are Brandon Yu and Maxine Sheffer-Wolf, and our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Joanne Wallace. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I thank you for listening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.